can dial, you can listen in to the call. But yeah, I think the first meeting after a time change is going to maybe be a little bit lower, and then the next time we'll have a larger.
So maybe we can agree not to do any earth-shattering changes in projects.
That'll be really disappointing, Phil. We're going to change the world.
We have the core group that can make this happen. So
we think we have a core, and we can dive in. And if people want to, if people see in chat, I put the agenda. So if people want to open that up, again, it's an open forum. You can add other agenda items, or you can take notes. I'll capture some notes as we go along too.
And I appreciate that. And, you know, we kind of put together a quick agenda. The first one, I forgot that Sharon did mention that, that she couldn't make it to this meeting last time. But nonetheless, I think that it'd still be important, Phil, if you and I can just give the group a quick update on the summit. And when Sharon joins us the next time, of course, as you can share with us with some more details. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, I can actually, if you agree, there were three meetings last week in DC. One was at the White House associated with the workforce task force of the White House that was talking about interoperable learner records and the exchange of credentials across systems. A second was the day before the meeting that you're referring to, Feng, associated the Friday meeting, which was the self-sovereign identity meeting. And that one was associated, also sponsored by Sharon of DOE, about what's called the open skills stack. That is a taxonomy for describing uniquely skills and their attributes as a an add-on, if you will, or an extension of more traditional credentialing mechanisms. And so there's a sort of, I see the three of these things as kind of a rapidly converging nexus. Because at the meeting at the White House, IBM and a group of schools in New York State who have been doing cybersecurity certifications are planning to try to move forward with putting those on the fabric environment of IBM. Walmart was at that meeting and is interested in certifying, in a badging context, skills for employees of Walmart. And they're looking around for partners currently from a technical perspective to do that, presumably involving, at the very minimum, the OBI V2 badging standard, and perhaps even the blockchain. And then finally, the meeting that we all both attended was around the implications of self-sovereign identity to the educational environment and education use cases, which began with a few thought questions that the tables got that Sharon and I put together the week before. Just to get thinking going. One of them, the general threat, just as an example, one of the general questions was really about what is, you know, to what extent does an individual have the right to have their historical record that would be in the blockchain selectively disappear? Or simply no longer exist in some fashion? And what does no longer exist mean? Does it mean that it actually has to be physically removed somehow from the chain, which is not a function as we know it of blockchains at the moment? Or does it mean it simply can no longer be found by having the key that's associated with it tossed? And then the only way you could get it was if you broke into the chain itself and managed to decrypt the encryption that they're stored in. So that was one of the thought questions. And then Drummond gave a summary, Drummond Reed from Evernym, their chief trust officer, gave a summary of what the what they're calling the trust over IP stack looks like, which is a fundamentally peer-to-peer trust triangle that allows individuals to have collections of certifications on their mobile device, present them via whatever communication, social media, whatever, to a third party, and have that third party be able to validate the authenticity of those by going to a validator. And right now, if you were in the sovereign network, that validator would be actually on the sovereign network because it is a public permission network, meaning that while the nodes of the network are privately run by selected individual groups, the network itself can at least be queried by the public. And so the authenticity of an individual issuer can be queried, and the signature that this is in fact the person that signed this particular assertion about a learning achievement is valid can be done. Is that a fair summary, Feng? I think the most interesting part of the day from my perspective, and I'd be interested in your take on this too, Feng, was the conversation with the FERPA police. where we had 4 of the 8 officers in that office on stage taking ad hoc questions from the audience. And what was interesting was Chatham House rules, and so they were quite candid, I thought. And they started by saying that FERPA is a legislative framework that was written in the early 1980s, and it has not been substantively changed since. And therefore, the only thing they were thinking about back then, since nothing else was possible back then, was the problem of institutions inadvertently disclosing personal identifying information from a student to a third party without the student's consent. And that was the problem they were trying to solve with FERPA. And the challenge that presents for us is that was back in a day when the only official source of information was the institution. And nothing that the individual had was considered official. It was an unofficial transcript or a photocopy or something that is not validated by the school. And nowadays, with our environment, an official transcript can live on chain. And if the person who has rights to the distribution of that wishes to send it someplace, they can do so disintermediating the school. And technically, that is a FERPA violation. And so they said essentially that most of their work these days is figuring out how to let people do stuff like this and do so with language and machinations of interpretations that allow the FERPA to be twisted into a way that makes it possible. But obviously that's not the way we would like to see things ahead.
Yeah, it did have a quite a bit of a creative interpretation of what FERPA and even the PII definition has since evolved and student sensitive information. Thank you, Phil. I really appreciated it since I was not at the other 2 meetings and certainly the White House one and then the other one. And I appreciate you providing the update. Just so everybody knows that this is actually the second kind of like a summit on education blockchain hosted by the U.S. Department of Education. And this time, the primary focus is just on the student identity and the privacy, right? And we spent a significant amount of time. However, Phil, just a question that from a participant perspective, that SSI, the Self-Sovereign Identity Standard, really set a very high kind of standard for this. It even started from the first one, the independent existence. And, how is that going to, I wanted to invite, of course, you agree that we're going to invite a trauma to to come to explain. But in the current digital world, how is that going to even happen? I mean,
That's a great question. And one of the ways that we're approaching that here at ASU is to just begin with the DID, just the identifier.
It's a decentralized identity.
Identifier. And have the decentralized identifier map to the existing campus identifier, which in our case, frankly, comes from the student information system.
Right.
And so we plan to build that matching app that will begin to associate the internally used ID with this SSID. And and incrementally build in from there along the different authentication and authorization schemas that the institution uses. ASU uses 8 different authentication and authorization environments depending on the populations that it's dealing with.
Well, you're huge too.
It's a big institution. There's lots of communities and lots of different use cases. So we have SAML 2, we have OpenID, we have Connect, we have social login, and we have all kinds of stuff. And ultimately, it all rolls back to a single Oracle database that we call EDNA, where this comes together. And so the question that our approach to this is to chip away from the outer edge into the middle, and start with the SSI identifier, so that we can play with a single identifier, both internally and externally. But simply our internal systems will continue to use whatever they continue to use for the time being, until we begin to look at how to transform those processes based on what is going on in new development in the SSI world.
And then, of course, you also mentioned about the whole record, going back to also the Europeans, GDPR, but then this getting complicated with the blockchain's immutability, that the record cannot be destroyed and cannot be deleted. Even if you said that you can hide the public key but what if those people who have been already shared, or either via the users themselves or the institution shared those keys, and it can still locate where that record.
Well, that's no different than today. And that's one of the advantages or things we have to remember. There's a tendency to over-constrain the future considerations of a new technology by applying things that actually don't currently exist today. So in the current world, if someone has been given access to a record and made a copy or a download of it, there's nothing anybody can do to retrieve that. We can't, the big innovation in email in the last few years was the ability to retract an email, for example. But that has limited...
That's a good point.
Possibility, because that only works if you're all on the same email system.
Yeah. Right.
So if you're on Exchange, you can do that, but not everybody is.
True. That's a great point.
That's Microsoft's strength. Yeah. So I think we have to be careful not to over-constrain the future of that. And Drummond did point to us, and I don't remember if he sent it yet, but I'll ping him to have him send it to us, unless you received it and I just haven't seen it. But he said that the sovereign folks had done a report for the GDPR group that explains how sovereigns, at least framework, is fully compliant.
Right. And no, I have not received anything, even though he and I have been talking, trying to schedule when we're going to get him on this meeting as the speaker series. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Phil. I don't know if we have any questions about the summit and it's quite an interesting event, even just to see the people in the room, right? And I personally still like to see more representation from higher education there. And although right now we got a mixed group, still quite large share of quote unquote vendors and presence over there.
Yeah, there were some. I think this was probably 2/3 higher ed in the sense of both administrative higher ed as well as more academic higher ed. We had the CIO for the Cal State system present, which is a pretty largely, as he pointed out, largely representative group. He mentioned the day before that 1 in 60 of all BAs in the U.S. have been issued by the Cal State system. Oh. Which is pretty impressive. 1 in 24, there was a qualifier about the 60 to 20. But it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Significant.
And he's on board. He interestingly was a critic of this approach, And, but he was open enough to say he also didn't quite understand it. And he's been starting to go cut to a couple of meetings to get more familiar with it. And then when he left the meeting from DOE last Friday, he said he gets it. And he wants to see the Cal State system move this way.
Well, we have had Cal State, and you guys are there, and the Western Governors was there, and there are maybe a number of universities, individual universities. So,
Little by little, we creep.
Yeah, and also, I have to say that I don't know, Sharon. Like it or not, but at this time I did get the full participants list with their emails, because last time, the first time, and Sharon just sent me a list of names and without emails, so I couldn't recruit them to join our EASIC. And so this time I'm going to send an email to all participants to ask them to help.
Yeah. She's actually also going to send out an update. I spoke to her the day before yesterday, and there were a number of people that attended that weren't on the original sign-up list. There's probably another 20 or so names that you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, Sharon also says she's going to share the slide decks. I haven't seen that either. So.
Yeah. Well, and let's all just keep in mind that it's been four business days. So.
Yeah. She did say she was slammed, just like the rest of us. So. Yeah.
Beginning of the year.
So I give her credit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the one thing I will say, just as a comment to the DOE, this is probably the most progressive I've seen the DOE act in quite some time. And so we owe her a debt of gratitude.
Clearly, Sharon is kind of a leading, pushing, kicking all this. So great. Thanks. Any other questions? And so, I got an email from Carrie yesterday, and she's in transit, on the way traveling, so she couldn't dial in. But she did ask if we can postpone her session to the next meeting. And then I was also very interested of her presentation and the work that she did by establishing that kind of a landscape, different companies and I don't know how many she has collected. She showed it I couldn't even take a picture soon enough. But
you'd have to shoot you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll just have to wait next time when Carrie is available, and she's really has done some great work in providing that the educational blockchain kind of a services landscape in the United States. And so hopefully that'll be interesting. And since we have a very small group, but David, why don't we just move it to you and to talk about Phil, you want to talk about the speaker series? And
I have something that I would like to also.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Why don't you go first?
Okay.
I think the speaker series is pretty simple.
So I think that there's some housekeeping that we probably need to do even before the speaker series gets set off, which is to set some basic ground rules for the group, tighten up the charter, at least the vision statement, and do that. That all sort of still stands as being very generic to the Hyperledger. So my suggestion is we need to sort of set what is the quorum that we feel would be appropriate to establish or have a conversation about those things, and then do that, because I think if we go straight into a speaker series, we're gonna end up with the I think we should start off with the participative activity instead of going straight into a speaker series where we're sort of people are joining to hear a wall of sound that they may or may not engage with if it's not engaging, if people aren't sort of required to talk about these controversial issues. So what do you guys think about that? And what do we think is the appropriate quorum to have a conversation about that?
No, thanks for bringing that up. I mean, I agree with that. I think there's some foundational stuff that maybe we want to do right before we get too far ahead of ourselves. I mean, for example, about tightening up the charter. I mean, I know We also had talked about doing an announcement blog post, which would kind of force the issue of revisiting the charter and, you know, making sure we're all on the same page about that. So yeah, maybe we need to make sure we're sequencing things the right way. Not that we can't also prepare for the speaker series so it's ready to go, but you're right, make sure we do things, get the foundation set before we go too far.
So do we, so a blog post would be a good way, I mean, so you think like a blog post would be a good way to sort of ping everybody out there on the, out there, all possible participants, as opposed to physical attendance at this meeting?
Well, both, maybe. I mean, I think putting, just the act of putting the blog post together would maybe have us address some of those issues. Like, if I heard you correctly, you had talked about revisiting the charter and tightening that up, right? I mean, we'd want to do that in a blog post, right? So we have a clear statement of the goals of the group, right? So maybe that, maybe it's a forcing function for, just throwing out an idea, maybe this is not the right way to go, but you know, maybe it's a forcing function to address some of the things you just brought up.
So I can devote some time to writing that blog post next week. And what I can do is I can send, I can swing that by the two co-chairs of the ESIG before I send it out. Do we feel like that's
Basically the idea is set up a straw man. We have, it's not more than, it's more than a straw man. We have, it is a provocative, it is an attempt to be, to provoke in the positive sense.
Yeah, totally.
Discussion.
Yeah.
And if everybody's in agreement, it's very quick. We just say, all right, it's a voice of by acclamation that we're going to go with this, with the opportunity to revise whenever we need to. And if there are points in it where there are in fact divergence of opinions, then this is the opportunity to get those on the table.
Yeah, I like the way Phil put it. I mean, I think if there's something that people can respond to, it's easier to have that discussion than just have staring at, like, you know.
Right.
Everybody not having that thing to respond to.
Right.
Yeah, I'll take, so let me take a swing at it next week, and then, and with the goal of getting that to Fung and Phil maybe the week after that.
Yeah, and then if we share it with the group then before the next call, then maybe there's some discussion on the list, and then we have some discussion on that next call too, and hopefully that would surface those points.
If nothing else, I mean, if things go smoothly, that means what whoever is able to meet at Hyperledger Global Forum can simply affirm it in person, and those that are not able to make it can vote remotely.
Sure.
And we can call the, one of the successes of the global forum time is to instantiate the bylaws.
Yeah.
Always nice to have a success at a meeting.
Totally.
Sounds
and
good.
I don't know if the blog post addresses all the points, though. I mean, does that cap? Would that capture everything that you think we should be sorting through right now, or?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to, when Kate sits down to write it, I think that'll, it'll become clear which ones are easy to do and which ones might actually be, we need to have a structured conversation around X, Y, and Z at the next meeting.
Yeah. Because right? In theory, that's what the work groups are. Like, if you think there's some participatory issues that the group needs to work out, I mean, we have that participatory work group, I mean, we can have a subgroup go off and make some proposals and come back.
Yeah.
So maybe the one of the tentative outcomes of the blog post is if there is a need for the work group, a set of topic areas that will help them focus their effort.
Yeah. It just okay. Before we go too far into the weeds on this, my goal will be to. Like this is organic, right? Before we take this into like X to work groups and this and that, like I think at the baseline we need some like general rules and a vision, right? General rules and a general vision that guides this, and then from there, if we want to go into topics or whatever, like I would handle that organically. That's
sure. No, that makes sense.
Their standpoint. So I'll start off with the first draft.
Great. Thanks for taking that.
Cool.
I appreciate that as well.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So that's about the speakers series. And a part of it, and it just came, just so you know, since the whole Hyperledger community started this speaker series, and then we just thought that it would be you know, easier for us to get some speakers to start putting some kind of videos into that library that David was suggesting. But anyway, now we have a process, and we can start from there. And then David, if that's okay with you, maybe just we'll be a few weeks late for us to start producing the videos.
Oh, it's your call. I mean, for the speaker series, it's, you know, it's optional. You know, that's it's totally up to the groups to decide what they want to do. I mean, we've seen that for other groups, and so, you know, I've shared that as something you could do. So yeah, there's no requirement on our end to do those things. But yeah, it sounds like it's something that people want to do.
Yeah, but having said that, I have to say that when you look at this group, and when you look at the summit that Phil and I, we attended, and then this group will generate very quickly, in a very short period of time, some really high level, high quality videos, speeches. So that includes both the members of this group as well as the guest speakers we're going to invite.
And I think from the Linux Foundation standpoint, that's our main interest. When interesting content is being created in the community, we want to know about it so we can then use our channels to share that out into a wider audience, right?
Yeah. Say, for example, the things that we are talking about, the self-sovereign identity, that's not just for this particular group. Almost the entire blockchain or hyperledger community should be concerned about that.
Totally, totally. And that's where I can help. You know, within a given SIG, maybe you're talking about dozens or hundreds of people, but across the community, we have a Twitter, you know, channel with 60,000 plus followers, you know, where you can really amplify the good content if we know that it's getting created. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In order to do this, we can, you know, qualify in the introduction for each of these that this is from the lens of the educational enterprise, and the initial focus of that is around interoperable credentials, and you know, identity, of course, crosses the entire institution and any institution, public or private, for that matter, and so. This, you know, our focus is going to be from that somewhat limiting framework. We hope it's provocative for the others and the other work groups to take it and build it out from there.
Mm-hmm. Specifically to that point, Phil, I'd probably like to have a conversation with you, and then maybe as a group to specifically talk about even how we can now make the credentials interoperable. And given that right now there are multiple solutions and the multiple approaches and the different formats being issued on the blockchain, and then even to some extent interoperable, is that the right approach? Or is this more of a kind of a API type of approach, just trying to bring different format together? So I'm very, very interested in trying to get that to the group and to have a conversation about it, and maybe even to build some kind of a standard or recommended at least some guidelines. You know, so I think that'll be really interesting to me. All right, let's move on. Go ahead.
I was just saying one of the first steps of this is just to at least put a marker in the sand for what is going on elsewhere on this
right.
Thing, right? And because there's three or four efforts currently underway to address this from different points of view. And we just want to make sure that everybody realizes that we're not inventing things out of whole cloth, but we are doing it from a, you know, the building on the shoulders of people that have spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed. All right, David, now goes to your the Hyperledger Community Forum.
Great. So my thought on this is maybe I can present this time just so you're aware of the options and could be thinking through it, and then maybe we can have a discussion again on it in 2 weeks when there's a larger group and, and on your end you've kind of thought through those options. Because the good news is there's still a little bit of time, not a ton of time, but a little bit of time until March when the Hyperledger Global Forum is happening. So you do have some time to put some thoughts together and plans together. So I wanted to present some options to the group again, just to be considering. You know, so just to start at the beginning, I think everybody here is aware, but Hyperledger Global Forum is the largest Hyperledger event of the year. This year, it's coming up at the beginning of March in Phoenix, so convenient for us. The original Global Forum was in Europe, and they kind of Linux Foundation tends to rotate the events between Asia, North America, and Europe to kind of try to catch the whole global community. So this year, it is in the U.S., so hopefully that's convenient for a lot of group members. There are a number of different ways to contribute. You know, the CFP process is closed, so, you know, we've been talking to the events team about additional things that a SIG could take advantage of. And so I did want to present a couple of options that the events team has presented to us. You can hear, I'll drop some links in the chat, but there's also links in the agenda. Here, let me grab those links. I'll drop them. Just 1 second. Let me put them in chat. And these may or may not be applicable. If there's other things we want to talk through, you know, the events team is flexible, but they wanted to provide some structure that we could talk through and see if it's going to be something that we want to take advantage of. So the first one is this special interest group kiosk. The thinking behind this is that if a group has a group member attending Global Forum, we wanted to give them some space in the main event area where they can present the work of the group and answer questions. So consider this like a booth among the other booths that would be there. You can see if you open up that wiki page that there's a number of time slots. This page was just created earlier this week, so no slot has been taken yet by any SIG. So we do have some flexibility. So again, this would be an opportunity. The events team has figured out sometimes when that main area will be full and busy. So this is not planned against other sessions. You know, there'll be a lot of traffic during these times. They really try to pick the peak times when, you know, we'll get the most ability to speak to people. So if there are people from this group who are going and we do want to take advantage of this kiosk, we can just put our names in there. And you know, right now all bunch of slots are open, so we could, you know, look at maybe even doing multiple slots. So that's one option.
How many slots can we, when you say multiple, I mean, would it be appropriate?
Well, I would say let's keep an eye on it. You know, I think it all depends on how many SIGs take advantage of this. If a lot of SIGs, like I was just, so immediately before this call, I was on the telecom special interest group call, and, you know, most of their membership is not in the U.S., so it sounded like they were mostly not going to go. So I think it all depends. You know, if a bunch of SIGs take advantage of it, slots will fill up, but if a bunch of SIGs don't, then there'll be a lot of slots free. So I would say, for now, put one or two slots in if you do want to do it. And then as we get closer, if more slots are free, we can take those slots, right?
Yeah, man, can you be more descriptive about what this looks like, please?
We can ask the events team. They set this up. I don't have an exact photo or a description from them. You know, all that I have is what's on this page. But again, the idea is that it would just be some sort of physical space, like a booth, in the main area where people would be congregating, where there'll be other booths. So we'll have, for example, some table space if you want to have demonstration with a laptop, if you want to have some giveaways with, you know, we've talked about having the physical cards to give away with information about the group. Again, if you want to have a conversation, if the kiosk is of interest to this group, I can set up a conversation with the events team so you can ask them more of those questions like that, so we can get some more clarity.
I guess I would just be looking for, like, I'm looking at this, so, like, how long is the shift?
Well, that information, I think, is on there.
Yeah, the time slot is on it, I think.
Okay, so that's a start time, but it doesn't have an end time.
Well, presumably it's the one that comes after.
So it's 15 minutes.
Well, yeah. And I think it may have said, let me just scan. So apologies.
So these are 15-minute slots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not clearly said on there, I'm kind of scanning through the intro. I guess they didn't write that up there. But
yeah,
yes.
So you
the
go idea to, is so sh- we go to a key. So you stand in a kiosk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just maybe I can go in and like comment at the bottom of this, but like, it would just be helpful to get some more info.
Sure. And the slots are organized to be brief because, again, they're trying to maximize traffic. So these are in basically in the break time between sessions. So we didn't want to have You don't have kiosk time during sessions.
Yeah. And is there a, separate from this, is there a place to leave literature?
That's a good question. Maybe on that, we can ask the events team if we could just have a standing, you know, if there's enough space to perhaps leave, you know, yeah, we can ask the events team that if we have literature.
Or a, you know, a board that you could take, you know, tape something or attach something to.
If you want me to, so let me know what sort of literature you have in mind, if we're talking about business card size or other things, and then
we'll give some thought to that. I'm just thinking, if someone missed a time slot because they're busy, then at least they could say, well, here's the content.
You know, totally.
Here's the,
sure.
Very short. This is the project. This is what we're trying to do. Here's the contact.
Totally. I'm happy to interface with, if you have a ask to the events team, I'm happy to to send that to them.
Good. Great. Thank you.
So know at this point, David, that Phil, are you planning on going? And right now, I am planning to attend, but it all depends on my schedule at that time. But how many people from this education architecture group are planning on attending? Do you know, David, or people?
I think that would be a discussion to have on the list, and maybe at the next call, if we have a larger group, if you want to start a thread, you know, we could start a thread and say, hey, we discussed these options for Global Forum. What is it, you know, is the group interested in those?
Well, I mean, what about just one of the functions of the website is you can put up a vote, right?
We have a poll function. Yeah. If you want to do a poll.
So one thing is just, you know, just leave a poll open for a period of time. If you're planning, if your plans that month include visiting the Global Forum, please let us know.
Sure. Yeah. If you want to send me wording for a poll, I can get that set up for you.
Does that make sense, Feng?
Sure. Yeah. We just need a way to find out how many people are going.
Right. We'll say in the wording of it, this is not a commitment. This is a fresh interest.
Just just getting a sense of,
it's a raw sense. Just, you know, straw poll.
Yeah. If you want to send me wording.
Are there any registration fees, David, for the event?
Oh, yeah.
So, let me see. I didn't put that in the, I'm pulling that link up.
It's not my,
So here, I'm dropping that in the chat. I did hear from the events team that it sounds like a discount could be available for anybody who wants to speak at a kiosk. I'll get more detail from them. But there is registration fees. The good news is there's an academic discount, which certainly applies to many people in the EASIG. If you go on the registration page, there's a heavily discounted academic rate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Because we want, I mean, universities, both students and faculty are a high priority for the Linux Foundation for community members. So we definitely want to facilitate academic, people at academic institutions to go to the event. So. Hopefully that makes it accessible.
Well, it does for faculty and staff. 150 for a student is probably at the edge of
what
would be a voluntary thing to do on a day or what have you.
Understood.
But
what's the rate for faculty now?
150.
It's the same as student?
So, Phil, along those lines.
Academic institution.
Right.
So Phil, just if you want to help us promote it, along those lines, we are planning to do a free Hyperledger meetup on Tuesday night that will overlap with the event. There'll be a booth crawl with food and drink the evening of Tuesday where people who sign up for the meetup will get access, and then there'll be a meetup afterwards. So if you know, that could be a way for students at no cost to at least take part in some of the...
That's excellent. If you can send me whatever details you have around that, I can try to send it out to people that...
Awesome.
Or we should send it out, Feng, through the list that we're putting together.
Right.
Anybody who's an academic institution.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That's great. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll send you the information about the...
We'll try to overwhelm them with proximity.
So I'll send you information about the Phoenix meetup during Global Forum. Sounds like you'll send me wording for a poll. And then let me talk through the last option real quick, just so you have the sense of what we could do there. So There is the kiosk, and then there's this also this other opportunity that we're calling Birds of a Feather sessions. So these would be if you have several group members going, if you want to have an in-person meeting there, we want to facilitate that. And again, help you promote that so it could be a recruiting tool. So there's another page here. Drop this. This is not the only option for Birds of a Feather sessions, but this is the recommended time. Again, the events team was trying to see when the most traffic would be available, you know, when things aren't going to be up against other, you know, opportunities. So they suggested lunchtime would be a good opportunity for groups to do Birds of a Feather sessions. I mean, if you want to meet other times, you could, but if you wanted to do an advertised Birds of a Feather session, that's what this sign up page is for. The events team can do, can create some signage, can add this in the program. So if you want to take one of these Birds of a Feather session slots at lunch on either of the days mentioned here, you could put your information on here. And again, that would just help with recruiting and signage. But if you want to meet, if for example, eight people from the ASIG are going, obviously you can meet whenever you want. But again, if you do want to have something that's promoted out,
Both available to the SIGs themselves, but also if there are projects within the membership of the SIGs that want to have a table, they can do that as well?
My understanding is that this is open-ended. So if you had a thing, if you said, hey, we want anybody interested in identity in academic institutions, yeah, this is not so structured and formalized where you have to be a SIG or you have to be a group. This could just be anybody anywhere. Birds of a Feather are more informal topics around whatever interests people, right?
That's what I understood. I just wanted to make sure that was translated into hyperlinks.
I think this could be quite good, Phil, because I think it'd also bring people from other regions and other universities in to start thinking differently, and you might actually recruit quite a few more and pick up some intelligence, especially potentially from researchers and things along the way.
I agree.
Could you, Sue, could you shoot me an email with some ideas for what you think titles might be?
Yep, fantastic. Happy to do that.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you. Great.
So those are the two kind of official opportunities, but if there are other opportunities we want to think through, you know, if, again, we find out that many group members are going, we could talk about other things, maybe like an informal, you know, meetup somewhere else, or you know, the group is, you know, everything is on the table depending on what the group wants to do.
Just for an information perspective, because I've never been to a Hyperledger event, do vendors host gatherings or various other sorts of things under their names that are directly affiliated with the event, either on-site or adjacent? Is that a common thing?
Here, I'm gonna pull up the agenda for you. Just one second, let me pull up the, just so you can see it.
Some events is very common for a vendor to have, you know, like EduCause.
Yeah, is there a vendor alley? Are there vendors there?
Yeah, so yeah, I'm pulling up the agenda for you. I'm dropping
it. While you're doing that, David, I also have a question. Does the project have to be Hyperledger based, or can it be just blockchain in kind of a general sense?
Sure, then I'll answer both questions. Let me answer the first question first. So I did just drop the agenda. So yes, there are sponsors that are doing some sorts of activities. So for example, Accenture, the evening before, for the people who arrive early, we're doing a diversity happy hour sponsored by Accenture. All that is captured on the agenda. There are some activities, mostly the activities happen in the convention center, but there are some offsite activities as well.
I don't see that on there. David, I see a diversity happy hour being noted here for Monday, but I don't see what you just described.
I thought I was talking about the diversity happy hour as one example.
It's not flagged as anything to do with,
there's no details about, yeah, whether that's who's doing that and stuff.
Yeah, so because this agenda, yeah, the Accenture team hasn't given us the details to post yet.
Okay. So this is an agenda that will go into the agenda before the event.
Yeah. We're iterating on this as details are being.
I was just trying to get a sense of whether, I mean, there are some The reason I was asking was, and Kate was prompting me for what was the genesis of the question. There are some venues I've been to where it is explicitly not desired for vendors to be anything other than co-equal participants, and that acting like a vendor in those events is considered an ejection from the meeting. So we used to run a meeting in Snowmass, Colorado. If a vendor actually left advertising someplace, then their room reservation was canceled and they were asked to leave.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this was a hard and fast rule. You came here as an individual to contribute, and you put your vendor hat at the door. Now, that's one extreme. And other extremes is like EDUCAUSE, where if a vendor wants to throw a party and hand out party hats and Patagonia vests and whatever else they're going to do for people coming in, and all they have to do is sign up, then fine.
Cool.
So, you know, there's a gamut there. And I was just trying to get a sense for this community where they stand.
Well, it's not on the extreme you would reference. I mean, we recognize that the Hyperledger community is made up of individuals and organizations with a variety of motivations and a variety of reasons why they're in the community. And we wouldn't want to tell somebody that they can't speak about why they're in the community and what it is they do and what it is they offer. So, you know, there will be people there with, you know, different reasons. And there are going to be some people, if you go I think all your questions, you're welcome to look around the Global Forum website. I think it might answer all your questions, but you could see on there that we do have sponsors. We will have space for those sponsors to have booths to talk about what it is that they offer.
Fair enough.
And the agenda will have information that has some people talking about products they have built, you know, using Hyperledger.
Yeah, you've answered the question. I was just, again, trying to get a leg because I'm naive. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like, yeah, if you've run into those sorts of events before, and knowing if this is one of those or not is helpful to know for sure.
Yeah.
And then the other question, ask the other question again. It was around
Hyperledger.
Whether the actual technology behind the blockchain needs to be from the Hyperledger family.
In terms of attending, I mean,
in terms of presenting the birds of a feather or whatever.
Right.
I think the birds of a feather is pretty open. I mean, as far as the formal program, again, that was determined. So just to give a little bit more details of how the agenda got put together, there was over the summer, unfortunately, the SIG, our SIG was created right at the time that process had been finalized. So we missed out a little bit on it, but there was a call this summer for community members to join a program committee. And then no staff was involved in selecting the top proposals that came in through the CFP process. So that committee picked everything you see on the agenda. But specifically for the birds of a feather, no, that's pretty open-ended. If there's I think it's more topic-based. If there is a topic that you have, you could propose it. If it was completely off topic, the events team may push back on that, but it's supposed to be a very bottoms up process where the community can pick the topics the community wants to meet around.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, we're coming close to the hour. What else is on the agenda, Fang?
Well, I tried to, today or another time, I try to get the members to share, you know, their own kind of who they are and, you know, what kind of expectations or there any kind of issues that they'd like to bring up to the, agenda. And, we can do it today since we have just only a few people, or we can wait until next meeting. Because I just like to get, the members involved.
I think till next meeting would probably be good, because if Sue, for example, described what wonderful things she's doing in Melbourne, the four of us would have a wonderful time.
You're funny, Phil. I'm happy to put an introduction also on the website and talk a bit about RMIT University's got a blockchain innovation hub. Many of you are probably hopefully aware of that, which is the world's first research center in the social science of blockchain. So we had a symposium last week, the week before, and very interesting in bringing all academics and a whole range of professional staff across the university. RMIT University is the largest university in Australia. It's about 94,000 students. And so we're quite heavily invested and involved and have been having discussions with Phil and some of the people he's been working with and really trying to get engaged further in some of the work that, that you guys have been doing. So I'm thrilled to be part of it.
Well, I hope you're handling the smoke of the fires and all that. I don't know. Yeah,
it's pretty devastating here. So,
sorry to hear about that.
Deep condolences.
Thanks very much.
I'm thinking about friends that I know living in Mullumbimby, for example, in New South Wales. And so far, at least they've been okay because they've been far enough north.
Yeah.
But even there, the Binaburra Lodge burned. I mean, that's tragic.
Yeah. Many people have been evacuated and are now,
anyway,
moving away and waiting to return to their community.
Is there anything we can do to help? Let us know.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys.
Very good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we just got a few minutes left. If we don't have any other things, then I will happy to return those minutes to you guys.
Great. Well, I'll post the recording and share the link around to the list along with the action items after we're done.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you, David.
Right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate it. Bye.